Fabulous Fix, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Again, our hearts and thoughts go out to the residents of Moore, Oklahoma, and other areas which have been devastated by tornadoes. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button, then the appropriate month. You will be able to see all of the links and all of the other things relative to every guest that appears upon, on this program. You may join others in the chat room by going to SpingolaChatango.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1 at yahoo.com. Remember that the March Against Monsanto will be taking place in numerous locations on May 25th. This is in opposition to the Monsanto Protection Act, which Obama signed on March 26, 2013. In conjunction with that, food rights activists from around the country gathered at the Sauk County Courthouse in Baraboo on Monday to support Wisconsin dairy farmer Vernon Hershberger at his trial. The Wisconsin Department of Agricultural Trade and Consumer Protection, the DATCP, charged Hershberger with four criminal misdemeanors that could land this husband and father in jail for up to 30 months with fines of over $10,000. That agency targeted Hershberger for supplying a private buying club with fresh raw milk and other farm products. That agency has charged him with, among other things, operating a retail food establishment without a license. He and other farmers around the country are facing state and federal charges. In recent months, the FDA has conducted several long-term sting operations and raids against peaceful farmers and buying clubs that have resulted in farms shutting down and consumers going without access to the food that they depend upon. All righty, you can see the links in yesterday's program on the schedule page about that issue. My guest today is Jan Ervin. His website is GnosticMedia.com. Welcome to the program, Jan.
Thank you for having me, Deanna.
Well, thank you for being on the program. It is an honor to have you on the program, and thank you also for that wonderful PDF file, Manufacturing the Deadhead. And, of course, we know that the CIA has long been established, at least in, 1947, in order to do what? Not what we think. It is not an intelligence-gathering organization of the U.S. government. It is something altogether different. Anyway,
well, it's interesting that you should say that, because as I've been researching the whole history of MKUltra and all of this crazy stuff going on with the CIA and getting these FOIA requests and everything and digging through the university archives on Gordon Wasson and finding all of these documents, is that apparently the whole goal of the CIA is, it just seems to me that it's not really about so-called intelligence. It's all about the dumbing down of American society and implementing this different aspects of this neo-dark age that we've touched upon in the new article, and perpetuating the drugs into society. But overall, it seems that the CIA's primary purpose is just the dumbing down of society.
Right, and creating chaos in other communities, in other countries. All righty, we are going to break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Our guest today is Jan Ervin. His website is GnosticMedia.com. All right, you were talking about the CIA and and their dumbing down operation. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying before the break there that, to me, the more that I've looked at the CIA and done FOIA requests and looked into the history of Project MKUltra, looked into the history of people like Miles Copeland, whose son, Stuart Copeland, of course, is the drummer for the Police. Ian Copeland founded IRS Records and promoted the Police, and his talent agency was also FBI Talent Agency, etc. But when you start looking at all of these different connections and these tie-ins to the music industry and MKUltra and all of these different psychological warfare programs, it seems to me that this is really what the CIA was always about.
Right. And you mentioned in your PDF file, in your very, very comprehensive article about Dave McGowan, who did this remarkable research into the Laurel Canyon. And
sure.
I mean,
you
I
know,
think
I tried to have him on my show a couple of times, and he disappeared right at interview time, and I don't know whatever happened to him.
Oh, I talked with him this morning.
Oh, you did? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad he responds to you, because he must think I'm a spook or something, because he won't talk to me. Well, he talked to me twice, and we had the interview set, and when it came time, I never heard from him again.
Huh. Well, I usually send out an announcement or a reminder 2 days before a person is supposed to be on the program, with all the times, the commercial breaks and all that. And so usually if I don't hear back from someone, I think, gosh, I hope they got this. And sometimes guests do disappear for whatever reason.
Well, that was a month ago, and I still haven't heard back from him, and I've emailed him 5 or 10 times and whatnot.
He said that his computer had been down, and so maybe that was an issue.
Well, I mean, you know, I had called him as well, but...
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it's neither here nor there, so what's your next question?
Okay.
I was actually really disappointed, though. I was really excited to have him on the show, and I had tried to talk him into, he lives about 50 minutes from me, maybe not even that, and I had tried to talk him into me coming down to his place and filming a series of videos with him and possibly going over to Laurel Canyon and getting video there and everything, and really, presenting his work the best we could, but I guess he wasn't interested.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I think that sounds like a really good thing to do. Now, in your article, you mentioned Gordon Wasson, who's a
sure.
pretty prominent person, and that's what the CIA does. They really go out and they recruit some high rollers. And that's
sure.
the kind of people they look for. In fact, when they go into the colleges to recruit, they want, top-notch students, people who they can train, to do what they want to do. And they've certainly engaged in a lot of various things, overthrowing governments in Guatemala and in Iran
sure.
and so many different other places.
It really seems that the type of person that the CIA wants to recruit is someone who's been trained in some sort of sophism and misapplication of the trivium method, or, you know, when it's misapplied, the trivium is actually called the classical trivium. And so I think what they look for is sophists who are trained in the classical trivium, who know how to, you know, distort and manipulate and use logical fallacies and things like this against the target audience. And, of course, Gordon Wasson started out as a newspaper man before he went to work for J.P. Morgan Bank as vice president of propaganda, having been trained by Edward Bernays, and he also worked with Walter Lippmann.
Very interesting person. Reminds me of Walter Duranty, who was very prominent in the 1930s, and who actually was a Pulitzer Prize winner, but he was
sure.
a big liar. He was just a liar and concealed all the murders that the Soviets were doing over, in the 20s and
30s. Are you talking about the philosopher Will Durant?
Duranty.
Duranty.
Walter.
Maybe, yeah, it's probably... Walter, I'm sorry.
Walter
okay,
Durant.
Because, yeah, there's a philosopher, Will Durant.
Will Durant, right. Different person.
Who exposes, how Plato... Yeah, would promote vegetarianism and things like this to control the masses and to keep them from reproducing and being able to think clearly.
Ah, you mean like what they're doing now?
Exactly. You know, and I bought it for 12 years. I was a strict vegan for 6 and a vegetarian for 12 years total before I discovered Sally Fallon's work. And, of course, I interviewed Dr. Dave Glidden and I interviewed William Davis just yesterday. I think it was yesterday I interviewed Dave Asprey from Bulletproof Coffee. And, you know, 100% of the people who have responded to these shows to me have all responded the same way. Every single one has had huge positive benefits from it, and not one of them has told me, oh, well, my doctor said I was going to have a heart attack, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's very interesting when you look at the background and see that they are using the same kind of tactics through the generations that they've always used.
Sure. And, you know, and to that point, our article shows that they were using drugs. There's a Italian professor, Piero Comparesi, who wrote a book called The Bread of Dreams, and in there he talks about the government in medieval times using drugs to dumb down and poison or even kill the masses, and poisoned bread and ergot contaminated bread, etc., which, of course, is where LSD comes from.
Right. Right, and then you have to look at fluoride and aspartame and those other things. And
sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just had Dr. Colin Ross on my show recently, and he's, you know, he's a psychologist, and he worked on DSM number 4, and he's also an MKUltra expert exposing a lot of this stuff. And, you know, oh, geez, now I just lost my train of thought, but what was your point? I'm sorry.
Okay, so what,
it's too
what
early
is
in the morning for me.
With DSM? What is, I've heard of it, I know what it is.
Well, the DSM is like the psychologist-psychiatrist handbook, and he explains it a little bit
better
than anybody else does. You know, and he explained, I brought up the issues with him on, you know, voting for certain things as diseases and things like that. He said certainly it's an issue, but he also laid out a lot of things that they used to overcome that seemed, for the most part, reasonable. And, you know, but he was actually the one who brought to me the MKUltra Subproject 58 documents. We had a lot of evidence, a lot of conversations between Wasson and Alan Dulles and these other people talking about these substances, but we didn't have any specific project number. We didn't have letters that were clearly written from Wasson with things blacked out on them. And, you know, so what they do, and, you know, going to this guy Comparesi and everything, they sell these drugs into society. They use contaminated foods or whatever, and they're essentially just, you know, kind of dumbing down and keeping the population docile. But I remember why I brought up Ross is, you know, I mentioned to him that, you know, the fluoride in the water, well, I mentioned that Prozac was fluoride. And he's like, oh, that's right. And he mentions the chemical name, the Latin chemical name of fluoride, or of Prozac, and indeed, you know, it's based out of fluoride. And so, you know, when you think of them putting fluoride in the water and Edward Bernays being behind that and him being behind training Wasson and the promotion of the psychedelic revolution, and the psychedelic revolution, I should back up a little bit and give it some context, but the psychedelic revolution was in fact launched by the CIA with the help of Aldous Huxley and Gordon Wasson, who were both members of the CIA's Century Club, which is essentially the East Coast version of the Bohemian Club in San Francisco. And it's actually the head organization, Bohemian Club, came out of it. And so Aldous Huxley, in fact, just recently I discovered some audio where Gordon Wasson was presenting on mushrooms to the Century Club. And at the beginning of the president of the century is talking about Aldous Huxley and his membership there. So we do have the president of the Century Club discussing his membership directly. And then Aldous Huxley goes off and he creates, with Michael Murphy and Dick Price, he creates the Esalen Institute where they promote all of this stuff. Gordon Wasson essentially takes Huxley's idea of Soma from Brave New World, and then he goes out and he attaches it to the Soma of the Rig Vedas. And then they start promoting this Eastern psychedelic philosophy or psychedelic Orientalism, as it's more properly called. And then they sort of couple the idea that of psychedelics being spiritual with Eastern spirituality, and then they sell that through Esalen into society. And You know, and I've, you know, a lot of people are probably jumping up and down right now, freaking out, who've had psychedelic experiences, and I've taken psychedelics many, many, many hundreds of times. And I'm speaking.
I heard you say that.
Right. And I'm speaking through experience and having gone through that whole thing and coming out the other side and looking at it, you know, from both perspectives. And I'm not discounting the potential that they're tools for the mind and that they may open spiritual realms. But what people overlook is that, you know, like a steak knife, you can use it to cut your food or you can use it to kill someone. And people who use them as spiritual tools often never consider what their predators might consider them as. Does the predator consider it as a tool of spirituality, or does he consider it as something that, oh, look, this person is drugged and in a slumber, and while they're drugged and in a slumber, I'm going to put my own mental program in them, or I'm going to manipulate them, or I'm going to herd them into this sort of new age, do-nothing, pillow-sitting mentality.
Whoops. Oh, I hear the music. We do have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Our guest today is Jan Ervin. His website is GnosticMedia.com. He has a radio program there. I have some very, very interesting guests. I hope that you will go to that website and listen to some of his programs. Very interesting. You mentioned in your article about the Grateful Dead and their influence and how they played into this whole drug subculture or counterculture.
Sure. Well, you know, we have a couple of the members of the Grateful Dead had worked with the CIA's MKUltra project as test subjects. And let me just pull that up here. let me see. I don't even remember where that was in the article. But,
Page four.
Oh, great. Well, my copy isn't numbered here. I'm going to have to pull up the PDF. Give me just a second here.
Sure.
But go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
The issue is that, you know, I can hardly ever remember what I write in my own articles, so.
Once you write something down, why would you need to remember it, correct?
Well, that's right, exactly. And I'm just looking for where I even put my articles here. All right, here we go. So, you said it was on page 4.
Right.
And what we have is several of the members of the Grateful Dead, and on page 4, we're just talking about how the Grateful Dead was there with, you know, Ken Kesey helped promote this, but the idea was at the Grateful Dead, they handed out LSD, where the idea of the tune-in, turn-on, drop-out meme that was created by Marshall McLuhan and later sold by Timothy Leary was promoted. You know, Timothy Leary didn't actually create that. And, in fact, in the article, we have a talk there listed that people can listen to Leary, Alan Watts, Allen Ginsberg, Gary Schneider, and Alan Cohen actually taking this tune-in meme that Marshall McLuhan created, who is a PR expert, and we can hear them talk about how they're going to use it against the kids in society to essentially drive them into teepees. Now, one of the Grateful Dead members who was a part of the tests of the MKUltra program was Robert Hunter. And then, of course, Ken Kesey, who was one of the merry pranksters, would go to the Dead shows handing out free LSD. And then what we also have is John Perry Barlow, who is one of the songwriters for the LSD or for the Grateful Dead in 2002. And he's even kind of proud about it. But in 2002 in Forbes magazine, he's actually out there bragging in an article called Why Spy that he essentially was working with the CIA and doing all of this sort of stuff. And then we also have Bob Weir and Mickey Hart as both members of the Bohemian Club up in San Francisco. And, of course, the famous chemist Alexander Shulgin also brags in his book Peacall that he is a member of the club, which, as I said a member ago, is the West Coast sister club of the CIA's Century Club. And the Century Club, as far as we can tell, we have many letters of Wasson and Alan Dulles writing between each other, recruiting members to the Century Club, etc. So as far as we can tell, it appears that Wasson and Alan Dulles were key head figures of the East Coast Century Club. And meanwhile, we have the same sort of thing going on at the Bohemian Club in San Francisco.
Interesting. Ah. Oh, and people are just so unaware of all of this. Now,
oh, sure, yeah, and it's all been sold as spirituality. And like I said, you know, nobody considers how these drugs, you know, they can, I think, be used as spiritual tools. But we also have to think, you know, if we look at shamanic societies, even the shaman is the one who becomes the priest, who becomes the king, who becomes the emperor and the, you know, and whatnot. And so what I think, and what the evidence is beginning to show, is that this was, and we talk about this in the article as well, is that this was really the goal of creating the field of ethnomycology, which is essentially the study of how different cultures use mushrooms, and especially psychoactive mushrooms. But, you know, if ancient shamans had figured out how to control a group, and then they create a religion, and then all of this stuff goes up into the king, into the kingships, etc., it seems that a large part of the plan in creating the field of ethnomycology and Gordon Wasson, et cetera, was geared around studying it and the ancient application of it as systems of control and not just as, you know, spirituality and the religious aspects and the mythology aspects. But, you know, for instance, if we go all the way back to the Eleusinian Mysteries, what we have there, and I'll, let me just pull that up real quick. It's, towards the end of the article. But what we have in ancient Greece was two different families that were controlling the entire Eleusinian Mysteries. And these families were the, let me see if I can, they're the Eumolpids and the Kyrkes. And, you know, so Gordon Wasson and Albert Hoffman and Carl A.P. Ruck, you know, and I know Ruck, and I've done research with him, et cetera. I've even published one of his articles. But they create this theory showing how the Eleusinian Mysteries were supposedly religious. But in there, Wasson talks about these two families controlling the whole thing. He talks about how it was a secret under penalty of law. And then he claims that it was kept secret spontaneously throughout antiquity, which is, of course, absurd.
Right. All righty. We hear the music. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All of these people, a good many of these people that you mentioned are also in the media, the publishing industry. Makes it very convenient, doesn't it? Be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs. Extendivite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
John Irvin, I-R-V-I-N. His website is GnosticMedia.com, where you can find this article that we are talking about. He published it on May 13th of this year, and it's very, very interesting. All right, you were talking about, well, a lot of things, about the Century Club and the people and publishers, and you mentioned in your article that you mentioned Henry Luce, who was a member of Yale Skull and Bone Society.
Absolutely. And well, you know, Henry Luce, going to him, that he's a really interesting case because, you know, he worked with Gordon Wasson at the CFR. Henry Luce was also a member of the Pilgrim Society, which is a sort of a group of bankers and whatnot, or actually I think it was maybe his son who was a member of that, but Henry Luce was definitely a member of the Century Club. We have confirmation of that from the Century Club themselves, and he was absolutely a Skull and Bonesman initiated in 1920, and I exposed that in my article last year, Gordon Wasson, The Man, the Legend, the Myth, which was published also on May 13th, and that's 2012 for that one. And the reason why I published these articles on May 13th is because they launched this attack against society on May 13th. And interestingly, May 13th is also the day that Israel was founded, and we have found many dozens of connections from MKUltra into Zionism, which was a very startling discovery. And, you know, so...
Well, you mentioned in your article a couple of names, Ginsburg and Cohen.
Sure. You know, and, well, when you get into researching the background of the MKUltra doctors, which I've been doing, more recently, something, you know, that, I was startled to find, and having been close friends with, Jack Hare for 18 years and whatnot, what we found essentially was that the MKUltra doctors, maybe 70 to 80% of them had Jewish backgrounds. And so that was a very, very startling thing for me. And, you know, of course, people will say, oh, well, you're being an anti-Semite, but how is it that 2% of society is, 80% of the people that we research their background involved in MKUltra and this whole sort of dumbing down of society that's being sold through the, you know, the deadhead and the psychedelic movement?
Well, it is very disproportionate, absolutely.
Yeah,
but don't you find that true in every other aspect of life, such as the media and finances and
sure, banking community, et cetera.
Sure.
You know, and it's you know, and And there was a really interesting article put out this last week. Maybe it was also put out on the 13th, ironically. I don't remember the day, but it was put out by Al Jazeera, and it had an interesting history of all of this and the promotion of anti-Semitism to actually fuel this whole, you know, like the Zionists had actually used anti-Semitism to create and perform their whole deal in Israel and whatnot. And then, of course, the article disappeared off of Al Jazeera, so you can only get it off of, like, Scrib.com now, but which somebody had sent me last night. But, yeah, you know, going back to Henry Luce and the Skull and Bones. So Henry Luce, you know, and these people, they brag that Luce and Life, Time Life magazines actually did more to promote LSD than Timothy Leary. And interestingly, somebody yesterday sent me two Life magazine articles that were both published in 1966, and one of them is the front cover warning of the danger of this, you know, LSD drug that's coming in and taking over society, and it's on the front page. So they're like, they're warning you while they're advertising it, you know.
Right.
It's all like it's all tongue in cheek, you know.
Sure. Like putting up a billboard that says, don't look on the other side.
Right, exactly. Or you know, telling kids don't do drugs, and then it's like.
Right.
You know, somebody was trying to argue with me yesterday and this morning that if you, you know, that, you know, banning drugs actually limits drug use. And if you look at the, like, the history of marijuana use, they had, like, an estimated 60,000 marijuana users at the time of marijuana prohibition 70 years ago. And now there's, you know, many millions, and an estimated 20 to 25% of the population uses it, right? And, you know, these people will actually try and argue it to you that, well, you know, why would they outlaw these drugs if, you know, they wanted to do this thing? Well, you have to think that, you know, kids who rebel, and this has been proved in Amsterdam, for instance, in Holland, but kids who rebel don't like to do drugs that are legal. And so when you outlaw the drugs, the rebellious teenagers and whatnot, which is in fact the target group that you're going after, they become far more likely to use these substances, and not unlikely. You know, and after 70 years of drug prohibition and rampant drug use, we can see that it doesn't work. And, you know, when they're putting commercials on television, you know, every day and making up lies about cannabis and whatnot, you know, it's like, how many times do you see one of these, this is your brain on cannabis, you know, commercials or something like that, and you think, you know, it would sure be nice to go smoke a joint and relax right now, you know. So, you know, this is, you know, when you, with advertising, it actually promotes it more, but with cannabis, with all of the health benefits and with industrial hemp and all of that, I actually think that maybe it is the one thing that was actually blowback and not LSD and the other psychedelics, which most people just, you know, when you talk about these things, they'll just scream, well, it was blowback, the CIA, all these people, that it was, they were just dupes and it was all an error and a mistake. But when you go in and you look and you see Wasson's letter to Bertram Wolff at the Hoover Institute that says, do you remember me writing you asking you where Tolstoy had said the printing press was a mighty engine for disseminating ignorance? This Mazatec affair is a case in point. And the Mazatec Indians were where he found the mushrooms. And in, was it September or October 1970 or 71, he publishes this article in the New York Times where he's supposedly sobbing about the hippies and the dropouts and the, all these people descending on Huerta de Jimenez in Mexico on the Mazatec Indians, supposedly destroying their culture. But meanwhile, he's sobbing about it in the New York Times, right?
Right.
And so he's promoting the whole thing while pretending to cry about what's happened to them when he created the whole thing himself.
Right. And who would know better than Bernays and his uncle how to work this so that you would get people to do what you wanted them to do by pretending that you didn't want them to do it.
Right.
That's, you know, just knowledge of human nature.
Sure, and I found, you know, it was just on a hunch when I realized how involved Wasson was with the public relations and whatnot with J.P. Morgan Bank. Just on a hunch, I decided to start searching out letters between Wasson and Edward Bernays. And interestingly, at the U.S. Library of Congress, I found a letter written by Bernays that was actually like a draft where he's writing a PR campaign essentially about Wasson. And, you know, so, but in this letter, he admits that he and Wasson worked together and saw each other regularly for at least a decade. And, it was during, the period that they worked together that, Wasson had written this book, The Hall Carbine Affair, which covered up J.P. Morgan's actions, during the Civil War. You know, and another thing that's come to light during our research is that an organization that was actually founded by Benjamin Franklin in like 1743, the American Philosophical Association.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes, they were a part of MKUltra Subproject 58. And right. as well as J.P. Morgan Bank, as well as the CIA, we've got the Esalen Institute in there and a number of these other groups. But, you know, so all of these different groups and organizations were involved in this. And in the CIA documents, they misnamed the American Philosophical Association as the National Philosophical Association. But right in the introduction of Wasson and Hoffman and Ruck's book, The Road to Ulysses, right in the introduction there, Wasson admits that in 1956 he was giving a lecture at the American Philosophical Association. Then you go in and you look at the documents from Subproject 58, which were all right there from 55, 56, and you see that it says National Philosophical Association. And then you see the CIA make a comment that they couldn't find it. And it's like, oh, well, maybe the name is just a little wrong here. Why couldn't they find that? Maybe they just intentionally wrote in the wrong name in the documents, you see.
Certainly.
And so, and when we see that Wasson presented at the National, or at the American Philosophical Association, and when you actually type in National Philosophical Association, it pulls up the American Philosophical Association where Wasson gave his lecture on this very subject in 1956. And so, you know, it doesn't make it real hard to conclude that it was actually the American Philosophical Association that was involved with MKUltra Subproject 58. So, you know, what really needs to happen is a public vetting of all of these groups and organizations that were involved with MKUltra and Subproject 58 and, you know, all of the different subprojects, et cetera, and then hold these organizations responsible, even if these people aren't alive anymore. These organizations like the Macy Foundation. Well, the Macy Foundation was behind the Macy conferences where Gregory Bateson and these guys actually created the MKUltra project. And the Macy Foundation is still out there today. You know, and these groups have been allowed to continue to thrive when they were entirely based on illegal secret human testing, etc. You know, if this was Germany, these companies would have probably been shut down or whatever, but here, these companies are promoted and allowed to continue, and it's not even admitted that, you know, the Germans got a lot of their stuff that they did from us from the early, you know, from 1920s through the 40s.
Correct, depending on what you're talking about that they did. Certainly, the eugenics all came out of this country. Just about everything that has anything to do with mind control, brainwashing, dumbing down the population was all discovered by some of the same people you're talking about, including
sure.
as far back as Benjamin Franklin with the Philosophical Society. And those were considered the enlightened philosophical gentlemen. And a lot of them came from Europe and
sure.
fled to the United States to Philadelphia. And
isn't it? Let me just say this to you, Deanna. Isn't it ironic that these people who work for this Philosophical Society, American Philosophical Society or Association, I forget which, but isn't it ironic that they never notice their own ad verecundium fallacies or their own false appeal to their own authority to do these things?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they never consider, hey, you know, why don't we, rather than dumb people down through the compulsory education system as John Taylor Gatto and Charlotte Isabeat and these people have laid out so well, and you know, and John Dewey was involved in the humanist dumbing down in the psychedelics as well as on the education side. I've tied him to both sides, and in fact, Kevin Cole over Tragedy and Hope and I did a video recently, you know, comparing our research notes. And you know, we had many dozens of research notes that matched up perfectly from our entirely separate paths of research. But, you know, geez, I have that morning fog here. So I just lost my train of thought again. Sorry.
Well, given the Philosophical Society that you were talking about also included Benjamin Rush, and he was a doctor. And so you can see the pharmaceutical kind of interest early on where
Pharmaceuticals don't really come into – allopathic medicine doesn't really come into play until who was it? The Rockefellers, I believe, were
right.
the ones who funded the study that Dr. Glidden talks about in his work.
Right.
And that was what the late 1800s or early 1900s when they sent the guys around all over the country to gather all of this information so that they could control that. But – you know, I think earlier doctors were, you know, were more of the herbal type and actual, you know, apothecary doctors and not, you know, this dispensing of pharmaceutical chemical doctors.
Well, they did some really funny, strange things even back
then.
Oh,
sure. Well, yeah. Sure. And I mean, you know, but you can read, like, for instance, I mentioned Piero Comparesi, professor from Italy earlier, and he talks about... some of the valid medicine that was going on in the 14, 15, 1600s and medieval Europe. And then a few years ago, I had this guy, David Hillman, on my show who has been investigating ancient Greek medicines, for instance, and he's found a number of medicines that they had invented way back then that had actually worked. Like they had already found aspirin and things like that 2,000-3,000 years ago.
Hmm. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so the pharmaceutical industry took over some of this in 1909 after the Flexner Report, and so you see them working now to in this dumbing down process across the board, not just with young people, the target in the 60s?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, it's always easier to work with the children. You know, the issue that they had early on in the early 1900s was the people growing up out of the 1800s and out of these single room schoolhouses were extremely intelligent and well read. And, you know, of course, when, you know, the best way to learn something is to teach it. So in these single room schoolhouses, the older children would teach the younger children. And this is why they worked so well. And this is why John Dewey and these guys had to shut these schools down and bring in the government compulsory education system. And on top of that, one of the key things that was used for education during the 1800s was the trivium method. And, you know, the trivium method, essentially all of the mind control systems that the elite and government use are based on the classical trivium, not the trivium method. But the trivium method sort of reveals how all of that stuff works and engages critical thinking in the young student's mind, teaches the student to put grammar before logic. Who, what, where, and when always goes before why or how. If you consider it input, processing, output, you know, it's grammar, logic, rhetoric. Who, what, where, when, why, how. And it's always in that order. And so what they do is they get, you know, the compulsory education system is essentially about getting children to put their logic before their grammar, trying to understand why something is before ever asking who, what, where, when. So then what happens is they're left with low self-esteem, they don't know how to find truth, and they're left to go appeal to someone else's authority to find answers. And so this is absolutely key in dumbing the kids down. So then we have John Dewey and these guys coming in the early 1900s. They're bringing in the compulsory education system. They're forcing the homeschoolers at gunpoint to walk into these schools, and then they're basically force the trivium out of the society.
Okay. And John Dewey was a Marxist, correct?
You know, I haven't looked into that. It sounds like you have a lot of key points that I should talk to you about as well.
I believe he was a Marxist. And in fact, the whole system, the whole school system, including standing up and pledging allegiance and all those kinds of things, are all very socialistic.
Well, John Dewey was a member of the Century Club. How about that?
Yeah, how about that? All righty, we do have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, our His website is GnosticMedia.com, and we were talking about John Dewey. And what better way to develop a herd mentality than to herd all of these children into these big government schools and then make them all obedient to Washington by putting a flag in every school, in every classroom, and making them pledge allegiance to it. And that flag.
So you're saying that John Dewey actually created the Pledge of Allegiance there, or had that put into
place? No, it was actually not John Dewey. He supported it. He supported the flag in every school. But it was actually the Bellamys, a couple of cousins, who created. Edward Bellamy was one of the guys. And they created what they had, a Christian society. It was a socialist Christian society who incorporated some of the work of Helena Blavatsky and her Theophysist doctrines. And
and let me just interject there. She was one of the key originators of all of the New Age stuff, and then that is what, as we point out in the article, as Terence McKenna admits, that is what he renamed as the Archaic Revival, which is essentially a new Dark Age that they're promoting.
Exactly. Right. So anyway, you have all this early influence, which leads us right up to the 1960s, where all these kids... Go ahead.
Well, let me just go back a little bit before we do that, because there's a lot more here on John Dewey, and I have a database that people can go on my website and download. There's a blue button on the front of the website there called the Brain Database, and I recommend people download that. It has over 6,000 connections and citations and leads in there for research so that you can, you know, follow things through and see the connections and everything between people and how they're associated. But John Dewey, he was at the Century Club with Alan Dulles, Gordon Wasson, and Aldous Huxley, interestingly. And then we see him, he's a creator of the first Humanist Society of New York, and he also signs on to the Humanist Manifesto. Now, the Humanist Manifesto is brought about by Raymond Bragg and John Dewey there. Now, there's a few other connections here. Now, the first Humanist Society, here is where it gets really good, is John Dewey, Sir Julian Huxley, who is Aldous Huxley's brother, and Albert Einstein are the ones who create this first Humanist Society of New York. Now, humanism becomes absolutely key when they sell all of the, you know, the psychedelics as, you know, what they do is they pretend that it's evolution, even though what they're selling is a new Dark Age. So, you know, they use all of this trickery. And, of course, you know, George Orwell, Aldous Huxley, and these guys, they were Fabian socialists. And, of course, the logo of the Fabian is the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Right.
And so, you know, they use these things. They, you know, like, you know, people will say, well, Aldous Huxley was warning about all of this stuff. Well,
no.
Right. You know, it's like if you go back to, Eisenhower's speech in the 1950s where he's warning everybody about the military industrial complex, you know, and this stuff going on. And meanwhile, he's also a member of the Century Club with Wasson, Dulles, John Dewey, Aldous Huxley, etc.
Exactly. All righty, we have our 60-second top of the hour break. We'll be right back after station ID and a word from our sponsors. Website is GnosticMedia.com. Be sure and check out that blue button that he mentions looks very, very interesting and certainly worth downloading. You were talking about Einstein and some of his buddies. And he left Germany, I believe, on January 1st, 1933 and never went back. But he was certainly well connected to a lot of the people that you've spoken about before he left Germany.
You know, he definitely knew Sir Julian Huxley. He definitely knew John Dewey. I've got him tied to John von Neumann, who's another one of these guys who was part of the Manhattan Project and creating quantum physics, which I don't know if you're familiar with the work of David Harriman. I had him on my show a couple of times, and he did a very excellent six-hour lecture series called The Philosophic Corruption of Physics. And for, you know, just to warn everybody, he is part of the Ayn Rand Institute, and I know everybody hates Ayn Rand just for the mere mention of the name, but rather than killing the messenger and attacking him for being associated with this group, I recommend people check out his lecture series, The Philosophic Corruption of Physics, because in there he reveals how quantum physics is based on Immanuel Kant's philosophy and how it's all false, in fact. And, you know, what I think is that it was done intentionally to dumb people down. But quantum physics was contributed to by Albert Einstein, Max Born. We've got Immanuel Kant, John von Neumann, Paul Dirac, Werner Heisenberg, and Wolfgang Pauli were all the key figures in that. And then, of course, the quantum physics becomes a key component of the new age and the dumbing down of kids in society, getting people to believe that there is no truth. Truth is arbitrary. You can't trust your own five senses to discover anything. Therefore, you might as well not even look. And in fact, recently Amit Goswami, who also happens to work out of the Esalen Institute, who is the fountainhead of MKUltra today and all of this stuff. But Amit Goswami was on the Joe Rogan podcast or experience recently. And he admits, he speaks of quantum physics, and here's a quote-unquote scientist speaking of quantum physics in terms of magic, voodoo, the matrix, and he admits that it's the combining of religion and science. Well, that's not science, folks. That is religion. If you can't verify something, then it's religion. And essentially, what I, you know, if we consider logic is the art of non-contradictory identification, then what we have is quantum physics is essentially the art of squeezing as many contradictions into one time and space as possible. And so you mislead kids and everybody else who are involved in this New Age spirituality. You get them to believe that there is no truth. You might as well not check a citation. Don't put your grammar first. Don't ask who, what, where, when, or why. Just pillow sit, be positive, and let us handle it.
Ah, terrible. And people fall for this. Well, not just kids. Not just kids. It's
not just kids. I mean, yeah, the quantum physics has been, you know, really sucked up into society, and it's been promoted for 90 years now. But, you know, David Harriman's work is really key for exposing how it's a huge manipulation, and I think it's done intentionally just to get people to believe that they can't find truth and everything is arbitrary.
Right. Harriman.
You know, one plus one isn't
name.
Two. One plus one isn't two. When you walk out of the, or when you go to the grocery store, it doesn't matter what change you get from the cashier. You might as well not even count your money. And when you walk out that door, your car is probably not going to be in the same place ever twice.
Yes. All righty. We are going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. And we are not taking phone calls today. Be right back. Our guest today is Jan Urban. His website is GnosticMedia.com. And in your article, you talked about in 1913 that Bernays used several different categories, several different focuses that he was going to impose upon society. And one of the first ones was overt sexual images in the popular media.
Right. Well, first what Bernays did was he was hired to protect a play that was going around teaching sex education, essentially. And he was essentially hired to PR it so that there weren't any riots or attacks on this group. And when the New York Times reviewed the play later on, they said that it was sex o'clock in America. And Bernays later goes on to promote this Russian dancer, Vaslav Nijinsky. And this guy would mime masturbation on stage, and he would cause outrage with the audience and actual riots. And then Bernays wrote that it liberated American dance, and through it, the American spirit. It fostered a more tolerant view towards sex. It changed our music and our appreciation of it. Now, what's interestingly is if we fast forward another 40 or 50 years, what we see is Jim Morrison of The Doors using, Freud's Oedipus complex, which is what Bernays was basing all of this on. And in The Doors of Perception, the song The End, it's essentially an ode to the apocalypse of culture where all of the children are insane. And then, in the song, Morrison talks about how, walked down the hall and he came to a door and he looked inside. Father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to, and this is the whole idea of the son wanting to have sex with the mother based on Freud's Oedipus complex. And so these were things that they essentially promoted in the society to break society down and to promote, the breaking down of culture and especially the family unit. And the reason why it was important to break, to promote sex and sex education and all of these things was to break apart the family unit, get children to think more about sex. And then you end up way further down the line with a society of single mothers.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay, you mentioned this dancer, and you could certainly compare him, this Vaslav Nijinsky, which, amazing that they would allow that or that would happen that early. This was probably, what, the 1920s? Early 1920s.
Yeah, but they needed, PR expertise to even do it. And, of course, it was all staged and it was all done intentionally.
Right. And then, of course, you have the same similarity, most of the music people nowadays, for instance, Elvis Presley.
Sure.
I think that he was probably somebody that introduced a style or reintroduced a style that became very popular. And then you have people. I was never really into the music. I like classical music, and so I didn't really get involved in all of this. So I really can't name some of the groups because I just didn't participate. I was in my room reading.
Sure. And I was very into the music scene for a long time until I started writing my first book, and then I got far more interested in research, which was about 10 years ago than I did in the music that I was into at the time. But yeah, what they did was not only they promoted the sexual dancing, which of course as Elvis Presley personifies, but what the CIA did was they hired this guy Vito Polakis to go around at various concerts like the Birds, etc. And then he would promote this freak dress and freak dancing that became the deadhead look and all. And it was all created by the CIA. It wasn't something that, the deadheads who think they're independent and free thinkers, it wasn't something that they created as they were rebelling. It was something that was sold to them. That whole look was sold to them by Vito Polakis working for the CIA and all of the people that worked with him. So it was all done intentionally. And, you know, when we look at the overall picture, if we don't look at each thing individually, when we step back and see the full picture, we can see that their agenda is this new dark age, or what Terence McKenna remarketed as the archaic revival. And then we see that the deadhead is the end product that they're working towards.
Ah, pretty obvious when you look at it this way. It's very obvious.
Sure, and then what we see is the word deadhead becomes a fallacy of equivocation. Whereas, you know, somebody who's just, into the dead, the Grateful Dead, or is it really a dead head, a dead mind?
Exactly.
Now, you know, somebody who's, is essentially, if we think of it as somebody who's no longer really being active, and what do these people say? They want to drop out of society. And, you know, it's a counterculture. It's an attack on the culture. And so if you're attacking culture, what do? You break apart the family unit, right? That's a key thing that you attack. So this counterculture and promoting the drugs and the kids, you know, getting them to break away from society, this breaks down the family unit, which really the only way you can break apart a strong culture is by attacking the family unit, because that's what holds everything together. And if anything goes wrong, you know, of course, what you always do is you return back to the family. But if there is no family to return to, and if you have a lot of hippies who then, you know, go on to be single or go to live in communes or whatever, then there would be some support in the commune system. But, you know, in the normal society, they would no longer have a support system. When you look at it further generations down, this whole counterculture idea then puts people in a position where they're selfish. They're only thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about the family and working together and building things. They're thinking about pillow sitting in the Golden Gate Park and not doing anything for the rest of their lives, because to them that's spiritual. And so, you know, it's when we think of all of these things coming in together, this is how they promote this whole dumbing down idea and getting people to essentially be ineffective and be a dead mind.
Right. Now, you talked about the number three. Bernays' number three is music idols. That's
sure.
How you've categorized it. And also the integration of a particular kind of music, going back to number two, a particular kind of music and dancing that was not part of white culture until they unified it.
Well, sure, you know, and what we have is rock and roll and jazz, and et cetera. It was primarily black jazz musicians out of Louisiana, et cetera, that were attacked under marijuana prohibition, that we can see the blatant racism going on there. But what I think, we talk about this in the article, what we think happened was they essentially saw the blacks as coming more recently out of slavery and therefore out of this sort of dark age type of mindset or mentality. And then here they're playing this rock and roll. So we think that they thought that anything that could denigrate society, and they would look at the blacks and say, well, they like this. Let's promote this to the white society. And so I don't think, like Edward Bernays was awarded by the NAACP, but I don't think he was actually interested in uplifting blacks. The more we look at it, the more we think he was actually interested in bringing white kids down towards this new dark age. And so he just used the blacks and the NAACP as sort of a screen or a cover story to do these hideous things on all of these children. And so, but Bernays writes regarding music idols, human beings need to have Godhead symbols. A public relations council must help to create them. And then he goes on, we have no being in the air to watch over us. We must watch over ourselves, and that is where public relations counselors can prove their effectiveness, by making the public believe that human gods are watching over us for our own benefit. And so what he did was, you know, basically one of the first American pop stars was this guy Enrico Caruso, and he writes about this: the overwhelming majority of the people who reacted so spontaneously to Caruso had never even heard of him before. The public's ability to create its own heroes from wisps of impressions and its own imagination to build them almost into flesh and blood gods fascinated me. But of course, I knew the ancient Greeks and other early civilized peoples had done this. So this goes back to my comment earlier about the Eleusinian mysteries and how they would do this. And here he's talking, and Wasson wrote that book, and here's Wasson's buddy talking about how the early Greek cultures did this. And he says, but now it was happening before my eyes in contemporary America. And, of course, he's creating this. You know, and I mentioned, Stuart Copeland, the drummer of the Police earlier, and Ian Copeland and Miles Copeland, who is is the founder of the OSS and a co-founder of the CIA. And so, all of these guys are coming out of this whole music scene and drug scene and dumbing down the culture, creating the OSS and the CIA. So, again, here's more reason to think that this is what the CIA was always about and for, was this whole, MKUltra style dumbing down and mind control geared towards steering the culture into the new dark age. And then, of course, we get to Dave McGowan's work, who's, as you mentioned and you spoke to him this morning, has done tremendous work in exposing the music industry and all of the Laurel Canyon musicians as the sons and daughters of intelligence.
Exactly. And, of course, all these kids think that they're just doing their own thing when, in fact, they're doing exactly what the planners wanted them to do. All righty, we're going to a three-minute break. We'll be right back. Today is John Irvin. His website is GnosticMedia.com, and you've talked about dismantling society and the destruction of the American family, and you talked about the NAACP, which was actually created by some of the same people that you've already mentioned, and that was created in 1909, and it was Julius Rosenwald and Lillian Wald and Rabbi Emil G. Hirsch and Rabbi Stephen S. Wise, and they are the ones that created the NAACP.
Why would a Jewish movement be interested in founding the NAACP?
Exactly. And you have Jacob Schiff was involved in it, and they controlled it. And they controlled it. And this organization didn't have a black president until 1977 when they appointed Benjamin Hooks. And so by 1977, look at all of the destruction, the dismantling of the family unit that had already occurred by 1977.
Absolutely. No, that's very interesting. I didn't know that. And I've got the wiki page up right now on the NAACP, so that's interesting. I'll have to plug some of these people into the database here.
Right.
Yep, there it is. Henry Moskowitz, Abraham. Let's see. We have William English Walling, Mary White Ovington. Interesting. All right.
And they got together. Before that, there was the Official Negro Project in Harlem. Which was the first, where they established the first birth control clinic. And, of course, we have Margaret Sanger, who was involved in that. So when you look at all the people behind the curtain, there seems to be, again, that 2% that is controlling some of the big, significant organizations or agencies that are behind all of the societal brainwashing and structuring.
Yeah, indeed. And, of course, if you point out that all of these people seem to be of one background, you're called an anti-Semite because this is the smoke screen that is used, to hide behind.
Sure.
And rather than looking at the crimes and the information themselves, ad hominem attacks are used against researchers like us who present these facts because, of course, they don't want anybody to look at this stuff. They don't want people to realize that, Zionism and a lot of these different political movements are extremely racist and based on racial hatred.
Right. And going down further in your article, you talk about feminism.
Sure.
Which is a
upsetting.
Really, yeah, that contributes to this whole breakdown of society.
When absolutely you get it does. And sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, you know, last year I interviewed Karen of Girl Writes What, and she's got...
Oh, I loved that interview. Oh, yeah, my goodness.
Oh, you've heard that my interview with her.
I heard it. I listened to it after we spoke. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Oh, okay. So, so having her on the show last year, and then I had spent a week or two going through everything she had ever put out, and it was probably the most upsetting and disorienting and all of the things I can say when I had gone through her work and studied it thoroughly. It was just so unsettling, all of the things that she reveals that, were just simply falsehoods that are promoted by the feminist movement, just like the psychedelic movement is promoted as this great spiritual thing that's going to save society. Meanwhile, it's actually, hiding, a lot of these people are hiding this other agenda with the Dark Age, but feminism was a part of this also. And what we're actually talking about here, I should mention, is all of these things combined, when we talk about them as a whole, rather than, just feminism or just, music idols or, the promotion of sex and dancing and things like that. But what we're looking at here is what's called the Fourth World Wilderness, or the Fourth World Battle for the Mind, which was, the Battle for the Mind was first named by William Sargent. Now, if we go to George Hunt's work, he did a video in the 1990s, and I interviewed him last year as well. But he exposed the UNCED conferences, UNCED, where he was actually there with Edmund de Rothschild and Maurice Strong and these guys who were promoting this very movement. And so when we look at what these guys were promoting, and it includes, we talked about fluoride in the water. We talked about the dancing and the sex and the destruction of the family. We've got the entheogenic experience in there without the trivium method. We have the environmental movement and the Gaia hypothesis. James Lovelock was there at the Lindisfarne Association with Gregory Bateson, who is one of the key people who created MKUltra. And we've got geoengineering and chemtrails in their genetically modified foods, the neo-shamanism movement, the New Age movement, the pharmaceutical industry, positive thinking, pornography, MKUltra, psychiatry, quantum physics, sexual revolution, television, professional sports. We've got the Council of Nine in there, UFOs. And, of course, we talked about vegetarianism earlier because, of course, they don't want people to realize that the brain is 77 or 80% hydroxycholesterol. So they tell
exactly.
You that you need to eat lots of vegetable oils and vegetables. So all of these things combined, and including wheat, are what is the Fourth World Wilderness battle for the mind.
Exactly. All righty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back for a long segment. Be back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Jan Ervin. His website is GnosticMedia.com, and we were talking about feminism and the destruction of the family, which brings up Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, and those people who started this movement, which ultimately led to the abortion decision in 1973. But when you look at their background and look at their ethnicity, and it's kind of interesting, and how they were recruited by the CIA.
Well, I certainly won't contest that. And, that goes into Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood. We have American Birth Control League, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Eugenics Population Control, George Bernard Shaw pops up right there. We have Bill Gates' father, William H. Gates Sr., and, of course, Julian Huxley.
Indeed.
Yeah, you know, just about anything that you research on eugenics and humanism and whatnot goes directly back to Julian Huxley. And then what we have is Julian Huxley running the British Eugenics Society, and he's running UNESCO and some of these other organizations in Europe. And then his brother, with the help of Michael Murphy and Dick Price, they launch Esalen in California, up here in Big Sur, Northern California. And then they promote the humanist themes in the Fourth World Agenda out of the Esalen Institute. For instance, if you read Terence McKenna's book, Archaic Revival, it's essentially a rundown of nearly every single point that is promoted by the Fourth World Wilderness Conference.
Right. And then you add to the mix Alfred Charles Kinsey, who was a big proponent of Aldous Huxley and Julian.
Was he really? So you're talking the Kinsey pedophile?
Uh-huh.
I didn't. Oh, wow. So I'm going to have to find that connection. But, you know, you and I are really going to need to sit down and talk and go over some research like you and Clint do. Clint's a good friend of mine.
Oh, I just love Clint.
Yeah, you know, Clint is the one who helped me expose my local mountain school district for ripping off the community for some $40 million here.
Great. He is an excellent researcher.
Indeed, he is.
And a good friend. Good friend.
Yeah, he and I have done a lot of research together, and we talk quite often. So, you know, and he had talked about somebody else that he had done a number of shows with me a few times in the past, and then all of a sudden this week I realized that was you.
Right.
So, you know, and I was the other show that he was on that was one of the first to start promoting all of his CAFR research, et cetera, as well. So,
right.
So we get to Alfred Kinsey, the Kinsey pedophiles, and he ties into the sexual revolution. The sexual revolution, we have Margaret Mead there. Of course, anthropology has to tie in, and her background is interesting. She goes straight back into the Macy Conferences, Columbia University, Ford Foundation, Fordham University, of course, Judaism. And she actually coined the Jewish mother stereotype, interestingly. Hmm. And then, let's see, we have coming out of the sexual revolution, I already mentioned Kinsey. There was another one here that I wanted to get into. Oh, Wilhelm Reich, of course, is right in there, same background. But, you know, interestingly, he attacked Freud in the Oedipus complex. But Wilhelm Reich and Margaret Mead, I think, were, yes, both influenced by Bronislaw Malinowski. Bronislaw Malinowski graduated from the University of Leipzig. And he graduated under the infamous Wilhelm Wundt. Of course, Wilhelm Wundt educated also Edward Bernays and Ivan Pavlov and John Dewey and Sigmund Freud, etc. So all of these guys and the dumbing down of education, etc., all inadvertently eventually lead up to this guy Wilhelm Wundt once we go past John Dewey and these guys. And so Wilhelm Wundt, and there's a book called The Leipzig Connection that goes into all of this, right?
Yes, I've read that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And, of course, you have Rockefeller that funded all of Kinsey's work, the Rockefeller Foundation.
See, I'm going to have to do more research on Kinsey's background because you're telling me things about Kinsey I didn't know. And if he's tied in with Huxley and Rockefeller, those are pretty huge connections there. So,
absolutely. And they're the ones and of course the media, promoted all of his work and got the doctors to accept it in the late 40s, early 50s.
Sure. And so he was going to need a PR man for that. So then, he's got to be tied into the same people because that would have all done through the same propaganda channels that Edward Bernays and Walter Lippmann and Gordon Wasson essentially headed.
Sure. And then you have Hugh Hefner, who came about in 1953 with his Playboy, which was just
right
after Kinsey.
Right. Of course, he promoted all of Kinsey's pedophilia stuff and the cartoons and everything in there.
Sure. Sure. And, of course, this demoralized women and just made them an object instead of a human.
Which they were also promoting simultaneously on the other side through feminism, right?
Right.
Because this created this separatist thing where women were their own, you know, forget the family, forget having kids, we want to be selfish, you know, torchlighters marching down New York streets lighting cigarettes, right, even though the whole thing is a mind-controlled opposition. So they're hitting both sides simultaneously, and then, you know, get the men interested in pornography and not caring for women as much, and then get women to believe that all men are rapists, etc.
Right. And what do you have? You have what we've got now.
A huge mess, thanks to Edward Bernays and Gordon Wasson and Ivan Pavlov and Wilhelm Wundt and all of their ilk.
Right. And I have people, in fact, once in a while I'll have somebody come on a program and talk about abortion and what it actually does to a woman. And that they never really get over this, that it is something that affects the entire family. And you would not believe some of the comments that people leave in some of the forums, that a baby is really a parasite, an unborn baby is really a parasite, and the woman is a host. What a terrible thing. And when you consider the number of babies that have been aborted since 1973, which is about 56 million, and you think, let's see, this is really a very serious thing here. And people are not looking at it, thinking about it rationally. They're not thinking about the numbers, because when you consider that it was passed in 1973 by the, what basically was Republican appointed Supreme Court, I think 7 out of 9 judges were appointed by Republicans. When you think about the numbers and the time frame, and then you move forward, there are people who are getting abortions right now who simply, it has always been a part of their existence. They thought, well, if it's legal, it's moral, and it's okay. But just because something is legal doesn't make it moral,
sure,
or right or anything else. And when you look at how it came about, how a group of people or a couple of people convinced Norma McCorvey that she should take her case to the Supreme Court, and it was a couple of women lawyers, one by the name of Weddington, and I can't recall the other one's name, but they were basically promoted by the Rockefellers and the same group of people. And so they were looking around for somebody that they could exploit in order to get this into the Supreme Court. And this lady, Norma McCorvey, was young. She was pregnant. And Sarah Weddington and Liz Carpenter. Those were the two attorneys. And they were publicizing women's issues. It was about 1971, and a group of about 200 Austin women in Texas created the Texas Women's Political Caucus, and it was a faction of the National Women's Political Caucus, founded in 1971 by Bella Abzug, Gloria Steinem, Shirley Chisholm, Betty Friedan, all there, you know, Letty Pogram, the same people were behind the abortion issue when it went to the Supreme Court. And it was all, you know, various people in various places all contributing to something that happened that has impacted the entire country. And people don't look at the history, they don't look at the background or delve into any of it to figure out, what the heck happened here?
Well, and there's a great documentary film called MAFA 21 that covers all of this pretty extensively, how it was all based on eugenics.
Yeah, I had the producer of that film on.
Oh, you did? Great. Fantastic. Somebody I should actually maybe have on myself to get into all of this, because it's such an important topic. You know, and I interviewed Curtis Duncan, sometime last year, around the same time that I interviewed Karen of Girl Writes What, and he goes into the whole feminization of men and the promotion of the soy foods and all of this stuff, you know. Because, of course, soy is extremely high in estrogen, and no male, especially a baby, should ever have soy. And, you know, they put all of these male babies on soy formula now, and it's just the most destructive thing you could ever do to a baby boy.
Exactly, because when they go into puberty, they just might develop breasts.
Breasts, and of course, Italy last year before reported that penis size had shrunk 10% over the last couple of decades. And, when we think of all of the soy in the food and we think of the jokes against Asian culture, you know, maybe there is a correlation there between the soy and the whole issue.
Of course, the Asians in Japan and in China, they do not use soy in the same way. They use it fermented, and that's really the only way that they use it. They're not roasting the beans, they're not making milk out of it, and they're not putting it, they're not growing it in such big proportions. I mean, we have so many soy
farmers. What about like edamame or something like that?
Right.
That would be raw, though.
Right, and that is something you probably don't want to eat.
Right, but I'm just saying, you know, some of that I would imagine that some of that would still go on in Japan, you know, the edamame and eating that kind of thing, which would, of course, have the same impact. But, you know, all of the tofu and all of that stuff, I just don't think that, I'm not even sure that fermented soy can be eaten safely. And even the USDA website has soy listed like 150 times there as a poison.
Sure. And when you talk to people about this, they look at you like you're crazy.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and people, you know, that's going back to what I said about putting logic before grammar. You know, people always try to put the conclusions before the research. They try and answer why before who, what, where, or when. And, you know, you're saying something that they never heard before. So the why is you're crazy. Well, let's attack you. Let's kill the messenger. You know, you wear pink shirts on Fridays, so we're going to dismiss everything you say rather than just simply going to the citations and verifying them and trusting ourselves to do so.
Sure. When you look at, well, of course, you also have GM soy, genetically modified
sure.
soy, which is even worse. But when you look at a product, you know, the ingredients in a product, there's usually soy. I mean, they even make soy cheese. And I know families
sure.
that put their children. And this not only affects male children, it affects female children. They develop earlier, which probably is not a good idea.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point as well. And, you know, I'm going to have to get some more research done on the GMO. I've only got 3 points in there, and connects to the Fourth World, eugenics, population control, and Monsanto. So I do definitely need to flesh out the GMO issue some more and maybe get someone on my show to cover that issue in detail.
Right. And you mentioned Maafa, the film. And
sure.
that was Mark Crutcher that was on the program. And he said that after their emancipation, that black Americans became the target of a far deadlier enslavement, often with the help of the very people they trusted the most. Because when they were enslaved, the blacks were encouraged to have all of these children because it was an economic advantage for the slave owner. And
right.
then afterwards, they became a threat because, okay, so now they were free and
still having children.
And then recognized what had happened to them. And so they went after the family. And, of course, the family unit under slavery, I mean, they could sell off the woman and her children and maintain the father on some other plantation. So that was very destructive. And so you can see why.
When you think about it, all they needed to do was take the what they did to the slaves in during slavery, and then take those methods and apply them essentially to the rest of the society, right?
Yes. And then you have the development of Charles Davenport and Cold Spring Harbor, which happened in 1910. And he founded, Davenport founded the Eugenics Record Office. And
interesting.
So,
I do have that Eugenics Record Office. And he was also Spring Harbor Laboratory.
Right.
And he came out of Harvard University. Now, interestingly, most of these dirty researchers that when I've gone through their backgrounds, a huge majority of them come out of Harvard and Yale.
Oh, absolutely. And Harvard, interestingly enough, is the same university that developed the protocol for brain death back in 1969.
What do you mean, the protocol for brain death?
So that they could harvest organs, which is a really,
So they could say that, this person is now brain dead. We can take their organs. They're not going to come out of this coma or whatever.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And of course, most of the people that they take organs from could recover. But it was Harvard that developed that protocol.
Interesting. I never considered that. Well, you know, I've got so many people here out of Harvard that are a part of this. You know, we've got Carol Quigley, B.F. Skinner, Andrew Weil, Alfred Kinsey, Albert Pike. We've got, Henry A. Murray, who is a MKUltra doctor. I.A. Richards is another important one in this whole dumbing down. He's the one who developed the 850-word language to sell to other countries, et cetera. And there's many more there on that list. Michael Coe, William James is another one right out of there, and he's a real important one as far as this dumbing down goes in psychedelics.
Indeed. All righty, we have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Jan Irvin, I-R-V-I-N. His website is GnosticMedia.com. And we had a couple callers that just called in and asked about something you said. What did you say about Socrates and Plato being vegetarian?
Oh, not Socrates, but Plato in the Republic. And if listeners want to go to my website, GnosticMedia.com, I recommend and we talked about Will Durant earlier, D-U-R-A-N-T. Just search Durant or Will Durant on the website and play the episode that I have posted there from him on Plato and the Republic. And in there, and also you can go straight to the Republic as well, but, you know, he explains how Plato's Republic is all about eugenics and it's a whole a feast for the elite, essentially, for controlling the masses. But Plato in there promotes vegetarianism to control the population and to help keep them from breeding. You know, and obviously, just like the brain is hydroxycholesterol, and you need a lot of cholesterol, like David Asprey points out, and Sally Fallon and the Weston A. Price Foundation, a low-fat diet, your reproductive system doesn't work as well as your brain because it's based on cholesterol. So their goal of this low-fat, high-grain diet, well, you know, grains like wheat are poison. And if you eat two slices of bread, it's essentially the same as eating a tablespoon of sugar. And no person should ever eat wheat. And I've interviewed Dr. William Davis on Wheat Belly, et cetera. But they promote this high grain or high carbo, low fat diet, which makes everybody sick and obese and not feeling well and heart disease and diabetes and all of these things going to the hospital, when all you need to do is, you know, switch back what is, you know, essentially called the paleo diet, which is basically a misnomer. But, you take the inflammatory foods out of the diet, all of the wheat and the grains and this, insulin sugar junk food that you pour into your body every day, and then we can begin to heal. But Plato talks about using these methods 2,500 years ago.
Indeed. All right. Another caller mentioned Jim Morrison, and he said, wasn't it Admiral Morrison who was involved in the Gulf of Tonkin incident?
Yes, and that is exactly correct, and we do discuss that in the article, that he is the one who launched the Vietnam War through the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was a total false flag. And Dave McGowan and ourselves all agree on the point that Jim Morrison's death was probably faked, and he was he supposedly died at the same instant that the ship that his father ran that started the Vietnam War at the Gulf of Tonkin incident, the same instant that ship was retired is the same instant that Jim Morrison supposedly died.
So I wonder where he is or if he's still alive.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not the only one to suggest that he's still alive. You know, there's been many other researchers that have suggested that the whole thing was faked. And, of course, if he was working with the CIA and intelligence community all along, they would have just ended his storyline and brought him on to something else at the magical age of 27.
Sure, and given him a new name, new identity, new position.
Absolutely.
And they're good at doing that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, ironic that he dies and his father's ship is retired at the same instance. I mean, it's just too much coincidence.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much, John, for being on the program. It's been very delightful having you on.
Thank you so much for having me on. Let's do it again.
All righty. Will do. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.